call the July 7th Plan Commission meeting to order. Mr. Fuchs, please call the roll.
Mayor Olson.
I'm here.
Commissioner Hogan.
I'm here.
Commissioner Leone.
Here.
Commissioner Haley.
Here.
Commissioner Morrow.
Here.
Alderman Dandria.
Here.
Commissioner Fowler.
Is that excused? We have a quorum. Please rise and join in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Is anyone here from Torbison Shows? Okay. In your packet, item B1, approval of the meeting minutes of June 23rd. Any additions or corrections?
I move approval.
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. We have no public hearings tonight under item C. We do have business matters item under item D. Carry over from last meeting, item D1, a unified development ordinance text amendment related to religious organization uses. Mr. City Attorney.
Mr. Mayor, within the Plan Commission agenda packet materials is a memo from Assistant City Attorney Chris Smith, and all of this was based upon discussion at the last Plan Commission meeting, including comments at the public hearing and comments with regard to constitutional as well as Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act issues raised by the mayor of the app, or the pastor, mayor, pastor, up above.
Okay, see you later.
of the applicant. In any event, I understand that everybody has reviewed, say, and that there would be issues with regard to what some might say are somewhat similar type uses that are permitted within a B3 zoning district, which is a commercial retail business use district. The assistant city attorney did some research and did cite a Seventh Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals decision with recommendations at the end that under his research, the choices would include to approve the application, or if not approve the application, then also consider as part of any action to direct staff to remove these other somewhat similar districts. Staff has undertaken a review of the history of the B3 district, and based upon that historical research, what I understand is somewhere within the last couple of decades, there was no evidence within a B3 district of any of the comparable uses, which are membership organizations, essentially, that are permitted uses in a B3, ever having been applied for and approved, with one exception. And there have been phone contacts or communications through the years historically, and that's two or three by way of recollection and records review. And Department of City Development staff and prior to that planning staff would have said it's not permitted. Religious use is not a permitted use in a B3. The singular exception that was found upon research was that of, and it was within the 76th and Ross and Shopping Center area, was an office for the Chamber of Commerce. And while some say that's similar to a religious use, there's substantial evidence that a Chamber of Commerce office is akin to the promotion of retail and commercial activities. So those are some of the general facts that were determined and verified upon research. In addition to consistent with the case cited in the assistant city attorney's memo, we did some further research, and I'll give you a very brief summary here. Decision from the Seventh Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals dated in 2006 Vision Church United Methodist versus Village of Long Grove, the Seventh Circuit, upon an appeal involving the application by the religious organization for a special use permit to allow construction complex on a property, was not successful before the court. And in that particular case, the church had purchased a 27.4-acre vacant plot in an unincorporated part of Lake County. At the time of the purchase, the property zoning did allow for a church development. The church later decided that it was interested in being having that property annexed into the village of Long Grove. And ultimately, Long Grove, per my recollection, only allowed churches as special uses. And despite the purchase of that large property and further legislation by the village, the permit was never approved. The Seventh Circuit, nonetheless, did not find any violations of constitutional and federal law, including the RLUIPA law, which is the acronym statement for that. Another case, about 6 months later, in 2007, by the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, was the Petra Presbyterian Church versus Village of Northbrook, zoning ordinance prohibiting churches from operating in industrial zones was the subject matter of that particular case. And in that case, the church purchased a property for $2.9 million while understanding that the zoning ordinance adopted, and this was in the year 2000, the year RLUIPA was adopted, that the zoning ordinance remaining from adopted in 1988 for the property was industrial, and that membership organizations such as community centers, youth centers, fraternal associations, and political clubs were permitted in the zone, but not churches, unless the village board was persuaded first to rezone the property to institutional buildings. The church went ahead and purchased the property, and they also filed a formal application for the with the board for the necessary rezoning permit, went to the Plan Commission. Plan Commission recommended that the application be denied, and fearing a formal denial by the village board, the church went ahead and withdrew the application, and began using the property for church purposes. Couple of years later, resulting in a 2003 amendment, the village started and then finished a legislative process that resulted in the adoption of a revised ordinance in 2003 that banned all membership organizations, not just churches. So this is literally 3 years after church bought the property, et cetera, et cetera. And so the church brought action, as I recall, and in part what the court stated was, we cannot find any basis, whether in cases or other conventional sources of law or in good sense, for the proposition that the federal constitution forbids a state that has prevented a use of a property by means of an invalid, even an unconstitutional enactment, to continue to prevent that use by means of a valid one. From the proposition that the village should not have discriminated in the industrial zone in favor of secular membership organizations, it does not follow that when it eliminated the discrimination by banning all membership organizations from the zone, this entitled the victim of the discrimination to claim by way of remedy discrimination in its favor. And later on in the decision it says, if the 1988 ordinance violated RLUIPA, as Northbrook, the village, comes close to conceding. Church didn't have to comply. Petra did not have to comply with it. But that doesn't mean that it acquired an immunity from all zoning regulation. It knew or should have known that Northbrook could redo its ordinance to comply with the, quote, less than equal terms, close quote, provision of RLUIPA in one of two ways. Number one, by permitting religious organizations in the industrial zone, or by number two, by forbidding all membership organizations in the zone. Then, the River of Life case, which was cited by the assistant city attorney in the memo, involved a hearing by the entire Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. The legal term for that is en banc instead of just three of judges of the bench. And in that particular case, the church wanted to move to the village of Hazel. The building that it wanted to move to and get the zoning permissions is in a part of town designated by the town zoning ordinance as a commercial district. The district is in the town's oldest part, which is run down. Indeed, the entire town has been in economic decline for years. The area designated as a commercial district is close to the train station, and the presence of commuters might enable the district to be revitalized as a commercial center. The zoning ordinance has therefore been amended to exclude new non-commercial uses from the district, including not only churches, but also community centers, schools, and art galleries, which is akin to the recommendation by the assistant city attorney in the memo. And later on in the decision, the court states, parking space and traffic control are not the only concerns of land use regulation. Another is generating municipal revenue and providing ample and convenient shopping for residents, and can be promoted by setting aside some land for commercial uses only, which generate tax revenues. Hazelcrest has therefore created a commercial district that excludes churches along with community centers, meeting halls, and libraries because these secular assemblies, like churches, do not generate significant taxable revenue or offer shopping and opportunities. Indeed, this case is straightforward because after the amendment to its zoning ordinance, Hazelcrest was really was applying conventional criteria for commercial zoning in banning non-commercial land uses from a part of the village suitable for a commercial district because of proximity to the train station. The ultimate subject area use, the detailed area, was the Orchard View Shopping Center, as staff advised, and that has been part of Area A for the past 2+ years that the city has been trying to redevelop, but most specifically that particular shopping center in terms of commercial retail redevelopment, and that process remains in the works. Another case, and this case is Eastern District of the Northern Eastern Division of the Northern District of Illinois federal case. It's one step below the Court of Appeals, but I mention it because it's dated February 26, 2016, 4.5 months ago, and it was another similar situation where a small church entered into a lease agreement, I believe back in 2012, $2,500 per month, and over the 7-year term, the rent would go up to approximately $3,400 a month. The church was already under the lease, and there were needs to create or obtain special use, as I recall, and lengthy negotiations with the village of Romeoville engaged for a period of 3 or 4 years, and there were expenditures by the church for building improvements, etc., during the time, And ultimately, the village and the church did not come to terms on the size of the church requirements, et cetera, et cetera. So the church brought this action. And the Eastern District, 4.5 months ago, determined that the church did not demonstrate likelihood of success on the Ray Lupa Exclusion Clause claim, and also did not demonstrate the likelihood of success on Ray Lupa Unreasonable Restriction Claims and Equal Term Claim. So that's almost through current with regard to the jurisdiction of the federal court that Wisconsin is governed by. And also with regard to whether or not any vested rights have been obtained, from a state standpoint, just for the record, we looked at the Village of Hobart case versus Brown County back in 2004, which speaks in terms of vested rights and how those are acquired. And bottom line thereon, and it cited the Lake Bluff case, which was the one I first recalled to get the quote on the vested rights. The theory behind the vested rights doctrine is that a builder is proceeding on the basis of a reasonable expectation. Vested rights, therefore, should only be obtained on the basis of strict and complete compliance with zoning and building code requirements, because a builder's proceeding in violation of applicable requirements is not reasonable. And finally, the League of Wisconsin Municipalities has a 2007 legal opinion, and it does cite the Village of Northbrook Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals claims with regard to the Petra Presbyterian Church claims that the U.S. Constitution and the Federal Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act of 2000 create a federal vested rights doctrine for property owners. The court said, no, it does not. The court also ruled that a zoning ordinance that does not permit churches to locate everywhere does not violate Ray Lupa by itself. And as another matter of fact, their churches are permitted uses in five other zoning districts in the city of Franklin. So that's the summary version of the legal review of it, as well as receiving facts from staff.
Questions for staff from the commission?
Any questions? I'm looking at you, but I don't intend.
I'll talk to staff during the week.
I said last time we were here together, I've been a strong supporter of churches for a long, long time. On a couple of occasions, I voted multiple times for the same church for multiple rezonings, and I stand by that. This particular application, unfortunately, doesn't fall into an area where I believe would help us. However, saying that, whatever happens here today, we want your church, and we're willing to help. Okay. I have two motions here. I got the sense last time it was to deny. So unless there's an objection, I'll read that motion. Is there a motion to recommend, and this will take a minute, guys. Is there a motion to recommend denial of an ordinance to amend the Unified Development Ordinance text at Table 15-3.0603, Standard Industrial Classification Title 8661, which is titled Religious Organizations, to allow for such use as permitted use in B3 Community District upon consideration of the regulatory criteria set forth in the Unified Development Ordinance, and the Unified Development Ordinance provisions for the B3 Community District, and as discussed and heard at the June 23rd Plan Commission meeting and this meeting, and as set forth in the Department of City Development staff report for the Root River Church, Inc. text amendment application and the memo and the presentation on the subject matter from the City Attorney's Office, as well as the facts presented, including but not limited to the fact that religious organization use is currently allowed as permitted use in five other zoning districts in the city, the fact that the stated intended church use property is within the area a retail commercial redevelopment area, which has been under review by the city for the past two plus, actually the past 15 years, and the history and lack of any arguably similar uses existing in the B3 district, which is intended for large groupings of retail sales and customer service establishments in a community-serving shopping area for commercial uses and developments to improve the tax base and quality of life in the city of Franklin, and further recommend to the Common Council to direct staff to review and prepare an application to amend the Unified Development Ordinance text to remove some or all of the membership organizations as a permitted use in the B3 district.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion and a motion. Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Dark bastard. Move on to item D2, Tuckaway Pines Condominium Development. Alderman Dandrea, you had a meeting earlier, later last week?
Yes, I did. I had a chance to meet with Wayne and several of the owners of condos in the Tuckaway Pines condo complex. The meeting, I believe, went well. They discussed some of the indifferences. Wayne went back and implemented some of the changes. But the biggest issue that the property owners wanted to see is how, and really the only point of contention, there's minor points, but the major point is Building 5 that you see that's going to be a parcel that's located between two existing buildings, condos, and they happen to be three-family condos. Or there are four family condos, and so Wayne, the developer, is recommending, and he's remaining consistent with the other ones, is to put all two family condos in. So they wanted to see how the projected prototype would fit within this site. And what you're looking at is the picture of the rendering. There are agreements between the parties that color of brick, color of sidings, color of roofing materials will match the two buildings that would surround it, as well as the other buildings that are in it. And so there was recent emails that came across today in regards to the condo association wanting to make sure that the buildings do match a little bit more closely, and they wanted to make some amendments to the to one of the conditions or some of the conditions in here. And that email was sent to all of us. Patrick, I'm not quite sure if you got it, but I didn't see it because of me working and then going to another meeting. But I'm hoping that the two parties are coming closer to an agreement with the structures. Is that a correct assumption? I'm not seeing a lot of head nodding.
Yes.
I'm seeing that the developer, Mr. Foster, is agreeing to it.
Alderman, let me help you with that, if I might, please.
Sure.
Just for the record, let me do this for the record. We did receive an email. Actually, Alderman Dandrea and I received an email, which I subsequently forwarded to staff, with the following requests. All buildings to include irrigation, that'd be lawn sprinklers, doors, windows, and exterior trim, exterior paint colors, type and color of brick to match, I would say substantially match, in all fairness. All railings to be aluminum, all deck boards to be composite, all walks to be concrete, all driveways to be asphalt, outdoor lighting at the front and sides of the building to be substantially similar to existing buildings, roof shingles to match, substantially. Be reasonable. And include ice and water shields, I think. Yeah. All units to include some electrical outlets and hose bibs in the garages. I'm not so sure our plumbing inspector would like to hear that. But anyway. And then the developer would provide a parking plan, a landscape plan, repair the damage to the roads, acknowledgement of the monthly fees. So that was what we received, and it also went to Mr. Foster. Mr. Foster then subsequently, 307, returned an email. Try to talk loud. So, essentially, what we have here, in my view, is a gentleman's understanding agreement that's now on the record for the city. Staff has a copy of the condominium association's requests, although probably not enforceable by the city. It is there for everybody to understand, and Mr. Foster has agreed to it, so I think we're in good shape.
Okay.
So, having said that, is there a motion to recommend approval of resolution to amend resolution number 2000? By the way, let me back up. Last meeting was not too good. I didn't like it. I didn't like the tone of it. And I will tell you that I'm heartened because everybody got together like they should have prior to that. So that's all good. So as long as everybody keeps talking, we're in good shape. So is there a motion to recommend approval of resolution to amend resolutions numbers 2001-5145, 2001-5317, 2005-5865, and 2006-6091, imposing conditions and restrictions for the approval of a special use for a 44-unit residential community located at West Tuckaway Pine Circle to allow for construction of 6 two-unit buildings. That would be building 0, 1, 2, 5, 10, and 11 in the Tuckaway Pines condominium development to be located at 7556, 7558, 7560 West Tuckaway Pines Circle, building 1, 7530, 7532, 7534 West Tuckaway Pines Circle being building 2, 7501, 7503, 7505 West Tuckaway Pine Circle being building 5, 7543, 7545, and 7547 Tuckaway Pines being building 10, and 7542, 7544, 7546 West Tuckaway Pines Circle building 11, and inclusion of the two documents received today as part of the file. Is there a motion to that effect?
Well, so moved.
I just wanted to point out that staff had revised the draft resolution based on the neighborhood meeting and the discussion at the last Plan Commission meeting. So adding a condition about the mailboxes, adding a condition that we need a revised site plan for this building, the latest version of Building 5, and revising condition number 7 to have that one condition about the porches and the columns for the porches be removed. So we have that in the packet.
Okay, and the city attorney informs me that that is all done. That is correct. That is a motion. Any discussion on the motion? Alderman Dandridge.
In regards to who's going to monitor and to make sure that these changes are maintained, is it going to, any major changes going to have to come back to the plan, or are we going to allow staff to handle the changes and make sure that everything is done properly?
Well, the direct answer to that question is there won't be major changes, and what we've discussed here tonight is part of staff's responsibility.
Yes, normal practices, and the condition is currently worded for staff review and approval of these revised elevations. We would bring it back if, in our opinion, there were substantial deviations from what you guys have seen with the added information we received tonight. In addition to that, I understand the interest of the neighbors. I would, if there's any question at all, discuss this with the mayor. One other thing, a clarification. For condition number 7, we didn't remove that condition about the decks. We would have to add that. But as our understanding, that was the discussion at the last meeting, that there was interest by the Planning Commission to remove that part of condition number 7 about the decks having an overhang and stone clad columns. So we would have to make that change if you still wish that.
Well, in discussions with the property owners, there are some buildings that do have that type of structure or built that support system in there, that they don't have the brick encapsulating those support beams. Correct? So there are some buildings that don't. There are some buildings that do. So the builder's request to have them filled, you know, surrounded with composite materials, I think their concern is that they continue to use the composite materials for the decking, that we make sure that that is to match and they don't go with an inferior product. And any products, I know that the builder also asked that he may want to change some frontal views of materials just to create a different dimension and a different look rather than have everything look the same, that would also be monitored by staff and that there would not be inferior products used to swap out the appearance. Also, in regards to the building on Site 5, I had asked him to look at the brick on the wings that come out and give us a different dimension look there than rather than just all brick. And Mr. Foster said that when he comes back with the original plans or with the final plans, that those changes will be incorporated.
Alderman, it's my understanding that your motion included a condition on item 7F. The condition, deck shall be covered and include brick-clad deck posts subject to the review and approval of the alderman and staff.
No. That
take 7F out? Totally out.
We're going to take 7F
all right,
off.
So your motion motion that was just seconded by Commissioner Haley did not include item 7F. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Commissioner Haley? I'm all right. So we're deleting 7F.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mr. Mayor, are you willing to listen to any comments from us?
I'm sorry we can't, sir. Not tonight. It's planned. It's not on. Any other comments for staff? Commissioner Hogan.
I do want to comment, and because I agree with the mayor that the meeting 2 weeks ago was not good on this. And I want to thank Mr. Foster for taking the time to meet with the people from the association, for doing that. From what I see going on right now, I know some of them aren't happy, but I'm glad that you took that time, and I just wanted to state that for the record.
Did it? Thank you. Anyone else? Seeing no other comments, motion to approve with the conditions signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Move on to item 3, Torbison Shows, Holiday Craft and Gift Expo at the Milwaukee County Sports Complex. Is there a motion to recommend approval?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion of the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
So moved. Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. We are adjourned.